Welcome to Spirits Podcast, episode 68, Hollywood Urban Legends with James Oliva.
Oh gosh, this is one that I wanted to do for a while now.
I was pretty drunk during this episode.
Me too.
I don't remember a lot of it.
All right, that's good.
I'm sure it's great.
Yes, James is a wonderful and enthusiastic person. We actually did an episode of Spirits with him beforehand, but it was not a real episode of Spirits. It was our crossover with Greater Boston.
Yeah,
but that was a lot of fun.
It was very fun. Yeah. And he was in character during that episode, but we did what sounded like a real Spirits episode about this fictional universe's urban legends. So we'll link that one in the show description, but it was very good.
I almost just said in the doobly-doo, and I hate myself,
Julia,
for it.
Julia, you weren't even a vlogger. Do you know who never says doobly-doo?
Our patrons, because they're good people.
Exactly. Our newest patrons. Welcome to Palmer, Tristan, Amber, Allison, Rachel, Caleb, Milo, Patrice, and Jessica.
There's so many of you this week.
Hello. Welcome.
Yo.
Welcome. And also, not welcome, but an eternal thank you. We love you. We see you. You are invited to our house anytime.
You don't always quite have a seat at the table.
But you have a seat at the table.
Yes.
To Neil, Philip, Julie, Sarah, Christina, Josh, Eeyore, Maria, Cammie, Lindsay, Ryan, Shelby, Lynn, Mercedes, Phil, Catherine, and Deborah, and our legend level patrons, Sandra, Ashley Marie, Buggy, Leanne, Ashley, Shannon, and Cassie.
Like Amanda was saying, you do have a key to our houses. Thank you for checking on our animals and watering our plants for us while we were away.
You're great house sitters. Somehow the house smells better when you leave.
It's amazing. Did you bake cookies? There's cookies.
Cookies remind me of sitting in a nice big plushy armchair and curling up with a good book, but sometimes I want to enjoy my good books when my hands are busy, like when I'm doing the dishes or when I'm commuting and have to like hold on to the subway pole and like move a kid away from my bag with the other one,
or like doing embroidery or just playing a video game.
Exactly. And while doing that, once you've run out of Spirits episodes and joined the Party Pod episodes and
all of the
Potterless and Waystation to listen to, you can listen to Audible. If you go to audible.com/spirits, you can start a free trial and redeem a free audiobook. And also, Julia, you can text the word spirits to 500-500 to actually get that download URL to yourself.
Yeah. And if it is your first time with Audible, you know that they've sponsored us before.
They have.
You will get that free trial and you get a free audiobook with it.
Yay!
And we're going to give you some recommendations later on in the episode.
Hang on. It's a cliffhanger. And Jules, before we get to this meaty, beautiful, drunken episode, what actually got us so drunk?
So I was kind of inspired by the like 1940s LA noir, like starlet kind of thing.
Right, like,
so,
oh darling.
Yes. Oh Charles.
My mink stole isn't the right color.
Which I also blame James because he has an amazing audio drama called What's the Frequency that is set in that time period.
Yes.
But anyway.
Which Julia's in.
That I am in. but I made us gimlets.
Yes. Not just a media company, also a pretty delicious drink.
Yes.
All right. So without further ado, y'all, enjoy Spirits Podcast, episode 68, Hollywood Urban Legends with James Oliva.
Yeah. So, Amanda, we're doing something a little bit different this week.
Are we?
I'm going to tag team the research this week. Because we have a special guest.
It's not me, right?
It's not
you. I didn't prepare anything.
No, you're good. Okay. You're okay. We're joined this week by just voice actor, audio drama wizard extraordinaire, James Oliva. Hi, James.
Hi. Hello.
Ooh,
thank you for
having
me.
There's a Skype call happening. Hi, James.
Oh. Yeah, that was
yeah, I'm
great
here.
Acting, Amanda.
Hi.
Good job.
Hi.
So James is going to be helping me a little bit with the storytelling in this episode because we're doing something that is near and dear to his heart as well as mine.
Yes.
And that is Hollywood myths and urban legends.
Ooh.
Yes. Which is a...
Ooh.
Ooh. Just well. Insert what's the thing oh. What's the
I'm sorry, did you interrupt the acapella?
You're talking about the musical instrument?
I was talking about the theremin, but Amanda just did what did you do?
The X-Files theme song.
That was good. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay. So now that we've really just dove in deep here.
So James, what is your connection to Hollywood? Is this a thing that you've just always been fascinated by? Like what is your kind of origin story with this stuff?
Well, yeah. You know what? Actually, that's a great question because it is something that I've always innately been drawn to. Like when I grew up on Long Island, and so I used
nice,
to go to the Middle Country Public Library, the big one over in Centereach.
Ooh,
and
nice.
Yeah. And so I used to go there and rent movies by, like, at the time, they used to only let you rent, like, 10 at a time. And
that seems very high. That does seem very high. Our library had a limit of 10 books per patron, which I was not able to get around.
Oh, I was like a five. The one that I went to was 5 books per patron and then 3 videos maybe per person.
Oof. This is the Middle Country library?
No, this was our North American library.
Yeah, this library was cool. So it was the cool one. Absolutely the cool one. Actually, it's world renowned. I used to go there all the time, and as I got older, I actually used to be one of the, just to give you an understanding of how nerdy or weird I was. At like 11 years old, I used to go there and I would go and ransack their Hollywood Reporters and Varieties, and I would be reading the Varieties and Hollywood Reporters, and I'd be looking at all the different deals that were being done and the movies that were in production and the box office results, and then like the special cans versions that were like for movies that were looking to be made. So there were movies in there that I didn't realize at the time that weren't actually getting made, that have never been made, that had stuck in my brain as like, where did that movie go? It was just an advertisement for a movie that never got made. So yeah,
that's,
I used to study that stuff.
Creepy and fascinating.
Yeah, and that sounds like the answer to, there's like a subreddit for stuff you remember but can't find on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so people will be like, well, there's a commercial from like 1982, I think, about like Weetabix, and trying to just like find particular
that's
ones.
That's fucking amazing.
And that sounds like something where you're like, I know for a fact in my mind this was a movie. And it seems like the answer to a riddle, like, oh, it was actually advertised, but just never made.
Yeah, yeah. Almost like the Berenstain.
Hell yeah.
The Mandela effect.
Like, Berenstain Bears.
The Mandela effect, yes. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that.
I had an intense argument with my fiance like a week ago. He was like, yeah, you know, like in that movie, Shazam. I'm like, that movie never was made. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, it was never made. He's like, no, it was. I'm just like, it wasn't though. Like,
maybe there's a Wikipedia page.
There's a literal Wikipedia page about it. He's like, what, you just, because it was on the internet, you'd think it's true? I'm like, no.
I mean, yeah, but also no.
But is he talking about the Shaquille O'Neal film?
No, the Sinbad one.
And Shazam.
The Sinbad one that doesn't exist.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what this is, James? Right.
Yeah. I know that you know the actual film, James, but this is a film that people are convinced exists.
Yeah, so it's like a whole internet conspiracy or like self-generated conspiracy where people just remember a specific version of the actual movie that was just wrong. Mm-hmm. And there's like Shazam truthers. And it's fascinating. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Oh my god,
okay,
that is fascinating. Actually, I want to know more about it.
Well, know what people are also convinced of, Amanda and James?
What?
Yes.
A bunch of different Hollywood urban legends that never actually happened.
Please give it to me.
So we're going to start with probably one of the most well-known ones, and this is the legend of the Munchkin suicide.
Oh no.
Have you heard of this one, Amanda?
Is it that in The Wizard of Oz you can see a body hanging from a tree?
Yes.
Okay,
but I'm gonna go ahead and start with this one because it is probably the most well-known. Amanda, you've seen Wizard of Oz, right?
I have. Thank you for giving me a gimme that you knew that I have at least one time in my life seen The Wizard of Oz full through.
Good. I'm very glad.
If not, my spiritual twin, PJ Scott Blankenship, would probably murder me in my sleep.
Probably. Yep. So The Wizard of Oz is one of those films that has definitely earned its place in the Hollywood canon.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the first films shot in color, and damn if they didn't use that color super well.
Oh, they did.
Also,
I super aspire to that level of like, I don't know, just like PR generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, hey, guess what? Come to the movies. It's all different now. And like to,
your shit has changed.
To put that into the world of your film is, I mean, I love when like stuff reckons with the medium that it's in, you know, like I love tattoos that know where they are on the body. And I love, you know, audio that makes you like uses the thing that it's doing really interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Wizard of Oz is like it's like the cream of the crop, you know, creme de la creme. Mm-hmm. I said the same thing twice.
Yeah.
Yep.
example of being like, hey, guess what? It's a movie you're watching and now it's all different.
Yeah. James, do you have any like personal relationship with The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's one of those movies that as a kid, I used to just watch like a million trillion times because it would always be on at some given time. And Amanda's right. The second that, I mean, even as somebody who had already, you know, obviously seen
color
TV,
film before,
but to have it shift over like that was like the first time I'd seen that happen in a film as a transition of some kind. And though my little mind couldn't understand what the significance could be, I just found that I found it to be super neat. It's really hard to believe that that movie was really not very well received or liked.
At the beginning. Yeah.
Was it really?
It was kind of a flop at the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
But a lot of really great stories actually came out of that movie. The story of how the original Tin Woodsman had to be replaced because he had an allergic reaction to the aluminum powder in the tin. Yeah, in the paint. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Is that real?
Yeah, that's 100% real. Also, Professor Marvel at the beginning of the film, he's like the wizard, but in the black and white version.
Right.
So the costume that was bought for the character by the costumer for that part was bought at a secondhand shop.
Oh no, did it belong to a Nazi?
It was actually the property of the author of The Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum.
Oh wow.
And they didn't know it?
They didn't know that until later on.
Really?
Yeah.
That is a much better version of what I thought it was.
No, that's just like one of those cool coincidence ones.
I went to Bugs and Amanda went to Nazis. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry that you guys went so negative, especially because we're going to get real negative in this next part.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about the chilling urban legend of the film, The Case of the Hanging Munchkin. So I'm going to preface this story as a shitty rumor to start about anyone. And we've discussed on the show before that we take suicide in mythology and urban legends very seriously.
We do.
We'll plug some stuff either at the beginning of this episode or at the end of this episode. But if you feel as though you need help, you can get help. And Amanda has a link.
And there is the dopest organization of all time, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And you can write down this number right now on your hand or your phone or a piece of paper or whatever and give it to yourself or a friend or just text them. It's amazing. 800-273-8255. It's the Lifeline and they will help you. And you can talk to them and no problem is too small or too big to bring up with the very qualified folks that are there to help.
Agreed. This story still persists even though it's been rebooked. Rebooked? That's not the right word.
Rebuked?
Rebuked. listen, necromancy. Fuck off.
I will live and die that is a valid way to pronounce that word.
Nope.
Also, that was a complete emotional yo-yo that pretty much represents our friendship.
Yes.
It's like, hey, Julia, I have actual problems and also butts.
So, rebuked. So the story goes, when you look in the background of the scene where Dorothy and the Scarecrow encounter and then recruit the Tin Man, as they're skipping through the forest saying, we're off to see the wizard, you'll notice what looks like a swinging body of someone in the background. The rumor says that it was an actor who played one of the Munchkins who killed himself on set because he lost his true love, which I guess, like, go for more detail. They say liars add way too many details.
Right.
Just go for those extra details, I guess.
And I guess you can only pronounce someone your true love after death.
Yes.
Right?
Like, it's the Romeo and Juliet method.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck those fucking adolescent those teenager fucking teens. Motherfuckers. God.
Those fucking teens who wore your mom's coat.
Ugh.
We did a production, James, in high school of Romeo and Juliet that took place in the 80s.
Yep.
And they danced the Thriller at the ball scene. And the guy playing Romeo wore Amanda's mom's red leather coat.
From the 80s.
From the 80s.
Oh, wow.
And when she got it back, she was like, this smells like teenage boy. I was like, Mom, what did you expect?
Sweaty teen. Yeah. What was this after the Romeo and Juliet update in the mid-90s? Or was this?
Yes.
It most certainly was, because it was 2007.
Got it, yes.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, fuck me. It's so long ago.
It was fucking 11 years ago, Julia.
I'm going to cry. Fuck. Okay.
I also got drunk for the first time during that show, so
we were talking about that on the audio drama Slack today.
We were. So good.
Okay, anyway.
Oh, I missed that.
It's still in general. You can check it out.
Okay, I'll go back and read it.
So another rumor. Oh, fuck. I lost my place. Shit. Okay.
This episode's already 15 minutes long.
Shut up.
I'm so excited. Eric, I'm so sorry.
I'm really happy to be a derailer. That's my...
James, you've been very on point. Julia and I are just on our third drinks and loopy.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I should have gotten started earlier too.
That's okay. It's okay. So another rumor says that it was a stagehand who accidentally hung himself on set after falling off a catwalk from above.
No, surely this is documentable somewhere.
So one would assume that it's documented somewhere if it was true.
Right.
Luckily, it's not.
But wait, is there actually a silhouette on the film?
Yeah. Yes, and I'm going to explain what it is.
Oh, good.
So all of this is a bunch of bullshit. The prop trees were way too fragile to bear the weight of a person anyway, regardless of size. So what was the shadow? Amanda, it's a fucking bird. If you watch the film, you'll notice that there's a lot of large birds, cranes, peacocks, etc., roaming around the scene prior to and during this.
Oh my god.
So the LA Zoo actually provided birds for the film, and they were notoriously hard to wrangle.
I mean, they're fucking zoo birds. They're pampered and like don't have any sense of boundaries.
So the birds kept showing up in random places in scenes where they were not supposed to be in. God. So it wasn't surprising in the slightest to see this random crane in the background.
Also, do you remember how, okay, so when Julia was in my theater program in high school, it was very intense. You had to audition in middle school to get into the high school theater program.
Yeah, so you were a 13-year-old auditioning for this very intense program.
Yeah, or 12 sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a lot of pressure, seriously. There was like a three-part audition process. Only like 25 to 30 kids were accepted every year from our middle school of like 1,000 kids.
Two middle schools.
There was only one adult in the whole program. So there was like one director who taught theater classes and occasionally other electives that the administration made him teach during the school year, and we had like a period of drama during the day, and then he just directed the show. He told us what to do. He was like, here, Amanda, do lighting for the show. And I was like, cool, I'll figure it out. And said to Julia's fiance Jake and other, you know, guys on the tech crew mostly, like, hey, here's the set I want, make it. And then at one point before the show actually opened, like 4 or 5 days before the show opened, some other adult, I forget his name, would just come
Rory.
Into the
it was Rory
oh it was Rory Rory, God.
Rory
would come jump on the platforms that, like,
to make sure they were sturdy enough.
If we had like a two-story set, which most of the time they were, he would just come up, jump on the platform, be like, seems fine, and then leave.
They're braced okay.
And that was all of the health and safety that we were given during our drama career. So a bunch of 15, 16, 17-year-old people were just like, I bet this paint doesn't have lead, it's fine. I bet this flat is gonna hold us up, I guess it's okay. And
this was only,
you know,
11 years ago, huh?
Yeah.
It kind of feels like
and
this
I
should
was
have
like,
been
I don't know how circuitry or voltage works, but hopefully I won't blow the school's breakers if I plug in all these lights, which I did many times. Yep.
Feels like the 80s wasn't the 80s.
Feels yeah, like it the felt 80s very much like the 80s there, actually.
Was very close ago.
Oh god. We're easily able to debunk the case of the hanging munchkin. Mm-hmm. But there are some ones that aren't as easily debunked.
Oh, Martha. Shit, you bait and switched me with an easy one.
I did. So we're going to The Curse of the Omen.
Ooh.
Movies that have some creepy stuff happening both on film and off. Amanda, have you seen The Omen?
Okay.
Oh boy, here we go. This is what I was hoping for. Let's do it.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you some facts about horror movies that I know. And you're going to tell me if any of them are in the same movie.
Nope. Okay.
So there's one with a TV, and they're static, and it's scary.
That's uh-huh. The Ring.
Okay.
No.
There's
no, not necessarily. That could also be Poltergeist.
It could, but I don't think it is.
I'm sorry.
No, I don't think so.
Probably The Ring.
We're also
going to
talk about
right.
that later. It's fine.
There's Nightmare on Elm Street, which we just watched. Yes. I know that one. There's one with a melty mask.
Melty mask.
The Scream?
Scream? Okay,
yes,
Scream.
That one.
Oh,
Scream. Cool.
The Scream.
Mm-hmm. There's one with... Is it Jodie Foster and a phone? She's a babysitter? Like, sexy babysitter and the guy's outside?
Okay,
is
no.
that also Scream?
No, that's also
Whatever.
Scream. Okay. And it's Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
Doing
less
good,
exciting.
Doing good.
And then there's little blonde child who has a demon in him.
That's The Omen, Amanda! Good job! I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud.
Thank you.
We believed in you.
Thank okay. you.
So...
I bet my good feeling isn't going to last.
So The Omen, which originally came out in 1976, was about the Antichrist being born and given to a wealthy American political family.
Oh, shit.
That was living in England for some reason. I don't remember the point. I think he was a diplomat of some sort.
Also, I love that it's like, hey, privilege, fuck you. Like, that's a pretty good. That's pretty
yeah.
good.
So already... up to a great start with something super creepy and cool. But when you apparently start getting creepy curses involved, then things kind of get really interesting.
All right.
The first things first, on the flight back and forth from England, star Gregory Peck and producer Mace Neufeld, which fucking good name, yeah. On separate flights, both had their planes struck by lightning. Producer Harvey Bernhard's flight also had a near miss with lightning.
Oh, shit.
Another good airplane fact. The airplane that was chartered by the studio for aerial shots but was switched at the last minute. The new plane was completely successful for the filming, while the original plane that they had booked crashed immediately after takeoff, killing everyone on board.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot mishaps.
That's a lot of avian mishaps. Yep. I'm with you on that.
I know that, like, you know, plane safety's gotten better each year, and so the 80s, you know, was different, I guess, but, like, that's
a lot. Yeah, you smoke in the planes back then, yeah.
The 70s. That feels so long ago. Is that child now a famous actor also?
No.
I have no fucking clue. I don't think James?
No, he's not. No. All right. But Sam Neill went on to play one of the sequels. He played that kid.
So the hotel that the producers and actors were staying at during filming was bombed by the IRA while they were filming.
Fuck.
No one died, thankfully, but that's the thing that happened.
Also, I'm so sorry on behalf of Ireland.
Yeah, sorry.
That was a lot. That was a lot of bad stuff.
The animal handler for the film was attacked and eaten by lions.
What? What were those circumstances? Yeah. I'm yelling off mic because I'm yelling.
Julia, why? I think it took place after the film.
After, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck.
After doing The Omen, the next movie that stuntman Alf Joint, which, again, great name.
One more time.
Alf Joint.
Alf Joint.
What? Alf Joint.
Wow. That's what fair. Other career could you have with that name?
Nothing. You can't
weed
do anything.
Dealer.
Or that. Which, like, I think he might have retired because the next film that he did, an unknown assailant pushed him off a building while he was trying to get ready, and he broke just all the bones and almost died.
What?
This is what this entire episode is, me stating facts and then Amanda going, what?
What?
I love it.
Also, Alf Joint should have retired and become a DJ.
Yeah, I hope he did. lastly, there's the incident of John Richardson.
Oh, no.
So Richardson was a phenomenal special effects artist. He was responsible for all the cool deaths that happened in The Omen, but specifically the decapitation of David Warner's character. You've seen this film?
No. Yes? I remember the kid standing on a balcony looking creepy. That's about it.
Okay. Is it a piece of glass
that decapitates him?
Yeah. So a plate glass like falls from a construction site above him while he's trying to warn someone that this child is the Antichrist and Yikes. Just decapitates him.
Yoinks.
It's like, for 1976, Amanda, real good special effects.
Ooh, how'd he do it?
I don't remember. I'll have someone look it up later. It'll be Jake, probably.
We'll have our researcher do it.
Yeah. So it's like one of the most iconic like horror movie deaths.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Yeah.
Like ever. Yeah. Yeah. John Richardson was not able to escape the curse of the film.
Oh no.
2 months after the movie's premiere, Richardson was in a major car accident with his girlfriend at the time, Liz Moore. As a result of the accident, Moore was killed via decapitation right in front of Richardson's eyes in almost the same exact way that Richardson created in the film.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Lord. Crazy. What are the odds?
Yeah, it's real bad.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are bad omens.
Yeah, that is a bad... Thank you, James.
Thanks.
It's a real good bad omen.
We needed a dad joke in there, right? You guys asked me to do the dad jokes, right?
Yes, okay, that's what you're here for. Amanda's here with the queer dad jokes, and you're here with the regular dad jokes.
Aw,
cute.
Aww,
adorable. Aww. We're next going to move on to another good horror movie that James already mentioned, The Curse of Poltergeist.
What is Poltergeist besides Peeves, the best character in Harry Potter?
Ooh, they cut completely really out of the movies, and it's just all fucked up.
Seriously? A fucking tragedy.
Yes.
Tragedy.
I agree.
Our national tragedy? Forget the presidency. It's Peeves.
It's Peeves
being missing
in the film.
From a bunch of British movies. Well, American national tragedy.
When they make that Harry Potter miniseries, I'm sure they'll get someone to play Peeves.
Oh my God. I need truly a 7-series miniseries.
Yes, I agree. You're not wrong.
I'm staring at you like you can make this happen right now.
Like, fuck it. Just manipulate reality. Make it happen right now.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing so much over here. I feel like I should be there to witness all of this stuff.
I mean, we wish. James, come to New York again, please.
I will. No, I will, actually. Yeah, we'll go out. We'll go party.
I didn't mean for that to sound threatening. I was just like, you better.
You better.
Fuck.
Remember that
plate
Okay,
class?
You better.
I'm getting my tickets.
You book that flight right now. All right. So Poltergeist, Amanda, you know anything about Poltergeist?
Nothing.
All right. Directed by Steven Spielberg, actually.
Oh, really?
One of the first movies
of
that
Jaws fame?
Yeah.
Did he do Jaws?
Did Steven Spielberg do Jaws?
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
well,
I
think that this movie actually was directed by Tobe Hopper.
Written and produced by Steven Spielberg.
There you go.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Please correct me on this.
I got it. I'm
people
here to
on
nerd
Twitter
out for you. You know? No, you're right. You're right. I'm here to help
on
out.
They're Twitter good. Will explain it to us.
We don't want
and not,
that.
Not to mention, I also screwed up the man's name, so it's okay.
I trust you.
I'll get killed on that.
It's totally fine. So this next one, I asked Jake specifically what Hollywood urban legends he would want to hear about it, and his immediate response was, talk about Poltergeist. I'm like, thank you, baby. I love you. So we're going to talk about Poltergeist, because I love my fiancé very much.
Well, it's a big one, too. You can't ignore it.
I mean, it's hard not to. So for people who haven't seen the movie, Amanda included, the story of the Freeling family, which is mom, dad, three kids, who moved to a idyllic suburban community, only for it to be disturbed first by playful ghosts and then eventually become a literal hellscape.
Okay, so playful ghost, I can get behind.
Yeah.
Playful ghost, bring it.
Mm-hmm.
We will, like, make life fun.
Mm-hmm.
Play some pranks.
Mm-hmm.
We'll, like, levitate some stuff.
Yep.
I'll be like, hey, you can, like, upturn my jar of dried beans hilariously if you also bring me my AC remote.
So Amanda's very into the first 40 minutes of Poltergeist.
Yes. No, that is like the first 40 minutes of Poltergeist.
And then the rest of it, she's like, nah.
All right. So what happens next?
So it wasn't just a hellscape crafted by Steven Spielberg. It lasted well after filming was done.
Oh, no.
The first person to fall victim to the Poltergeist curse was Dominique Dunn, who played the oldest Freeling daughter. Dana, I think, was the character's name, James?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So her career was just starting to pick up when she was strangled to death by her abusive boyfriend. Yeah, the boyfriend was convicted of voluntary manslaughter, which it also, what the fuck, it's not manslaughter if you choke someone to death.
Maybe because they were trying to shove it under some sort of passion of crime of passion sort of thing, and they were like, it wasn't premeditated. But no, it was murder.
Bullshit.
It was murder.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, it was the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes
things were different.
You know, these things happened in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know any better back then.
Yeah, sure.
But you know what? We know better now. And if you are in a situation where you think you need help or you want to talk or some signs are kind of odd or you need your resources kind of laid out to you by somebody who can help,
Amanda's got another phone number.
Go to rain.org.
Yeah.
RAINN.org. They can help.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Amanda.
Absolutely.
Also, this jackass was paroled after less than 4 years served. So fuck him.
Fuck him. Fuck you all.
Fuck him.
But that wasn't the only death to come out of the Poltergeist. The youngest daughter, who was taken by the Beast, which is the name of the Poltergeist in this, in the first film was played by Heather O'Rourke. And she was discovered by Steven Spielberg himself. She also starred in all three of the Poltergeist films, but she died before the third premiered.
No.
She was apparently a, like, really healthy kid who came down with a case of the flu, which led to a heart attack at the age of 12.
What?
Yeah.
That sounds like a May cause thing in pharmaceutical commercials where, like, it happened to one person, so they have to say it.
Heather O'Rourke was that person,
but,
I
like,
guess.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually don't think she finished the whole third film. They had to, like, use, like, the back of some stunt double little girl thing.
That's probably right.
By.
Several other older cast members died before their films premiered, including Julian Beck and Will Sampson, who were both the antagonist and the protagonist for the second film, I believe.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the Poltergeist curse. James, do you have anything to add for that one?
Yeah, that one was pretty bad. I remember as a kid, like, Heather O'Rourke and I were around the same age. So when she died, I was like, what? Like, it just seemed like
went
so
to school together, and I was like, James,
I know you buried the lead.
No.
But I remember that it was such a monumentous moment, though, as like a little kid, and like seeing someone else that you've seen in two other movies, and she's a little girl like you are, like you're a little boy, and therefore she just dies up and dies for like almost no reason, completely mysterious at the time, like when it was reported. But it was kind of spooky. Like you're like, whoa, no, that's not supposed to happen yet, you know?
Yeah.
That left an impression as a kid. So yeah, I remember that. I mean, the whole poltergeist thing, especially her sister too. The girl played her sister in the movie. Having been murdered, that was also, you know, it was really just a weird thing.
Yeah.
Just, yikes. Yeah.
Oof, ugh. Boy. On that note, Amanda, I think I need a refill.
Yes, I'm going to need one too. We are sponsored this week by Audible. They've sponsored us before. We like them a lot. We love stories. We love audio. And so this is an awesome pairing for us.
They are the Venn diagram of things that we like.
And if you already are like, yo, Audible, like I know that I should listen to books. I know that I want to do this. I know that I want like long form audio in my ears or my car or my, you know, smart home devices all the time. You can go right ahead to audible.com/spirits or text the word spirits to 500-500 to get that URL and sign up for a free trial and audiobook.
Yeah. Amanda, do you have a good suggestion for an audiobook that our listeners can listen to?
I actually do. I am traveling soon. Actually, the day this episode comes out, I'm going on vacation. I'm very excited about it.
I'm super jealous. Go ahead.
Something that I love to do when I'm on vacation is read murder mysteries. And often vacation will involve like trying to nap on a plane, but you can't really get to sleep, but it's like dark outside, so you can't really read, blah, blah, blah. And I like to listen to scary murder stories to get me to sleep.
Do you?
One of the things that Julia and I have in common is a love of the, you know, macabre. And I really love murder novels. My favorite author, I think, writing today is Tana French, who writes this Dublin Murder Squad series. I love them.
I know you do.
I probably mentioned them in passing before, but this is the first time that I've listened to an audiobook of one of her novels. And the one I want to recommend is called The Secret Place. If you read The Secret History by Donna Tartt, you are going to love this book. This one's The Secret Place, not The Secret History. Both are really good. But in The Secret Place by Tana French, a police officer goes undercover into a group of like really rich, spoiled, shady college students.
Cool.
And they're in a like decaying house on the moors, and there is nothing more like luxurious and both despicable but also lovely. The writing is really good. It's not super long, so you can kind of get through it, you know, on the beach, on a train, on a plane, and it is really, really dope.
That's awesome. That sounds really, really cool.
She's written, I think, 6 books. I read all of them twice because I'm so sad that there are not more of them.
Dang. I have a recommendation.
Ooh, tell me about it.
So this book actually just came out. It came out the day that we are recording it. Whoa. And of course, the first thing I did was go to Audible and get my audiobook for it.
Ooh.
But it is called Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi.
Sign me up.
And it is, reading it, Amanda, I'm only 12 chapters in at this point, but reading it, Amanda, it reminds me of reading Harry Potter for the first time.
Wow. It's, high praise.
It takes place in sort of a fantasy West Africa, and it is a world where magic once existed, but for some reasons the gods deigned to take magic away, but something is happening where magic is slowly returning to people, and it's very, very cool.
I love that idea so much. We talk all the time about how much we love like nuanced depictions of magic. That sounds right up my alley. I think I am going to go to audible.com/spirits, sign up for a free trial, get a free audiobook, and download that one.
Yeah, if you liked our Rain Queens episode, this is very in the same vein, and it's very, very cool.
And Audible has a great listen guarantee, so if you choose that book or a different book and you don't like it, you can swap it out for something else. So it's not like you commit, you know, and that's the last you're ever going to see of, you know, the money that you spent. So they are really, really great for that. You can access your books anywhere. You own them, so even after you know, perhaps suspend or pause your service, you're still able to access all of your books. You own them, which I think is really, really great.
So thank you, Audible, for sponsoring this episode of Spirits. And I think it's time to get back to the crazy drunk stories.
Back to the show.
Yeah. So James, I understand that you brought a story with you for this one.
I did. Because this is one of the worst ones that I know of.
All right, sweet.
As far as like one of those creepy haunted movie productions. And it also happens to be one of the fewer known films that have been made, period. Its claim to fame is that it was, I do believe, the first movie to be shot in Esperanto. Do you guys know what Esperanto is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell it for our listeners, though, because just because Ahmed okay. and I are aware.
No, that's okay. You guys know. Esperanto was basically, I do believe, a language that was sort of created in 1887 or something like that. And it was intended to be like this blend of different languages. And it was meant to be a universal language, one that which could, you know, unify them all or whatever. And just never really took off.
Yeah, there are some fics written in Esperanto on really? Archive of Our Own.
Really?
Yes, really.
What pairings? Tell me.
I will bring them up right now as James talks.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, no problem. This movie was one of the first movies, or the only movie, really, to be made in Esperanto. The reason being wasn't exactly 100% clear, so, you know, depending on who you talk to from the crew. Some of it was either it was meant to be as a gimmick or to ensure its niche among people that were supposedly speaking it. And the other one that I tend to believe is the one where it's like, because it has this sort of kind of like a spooky quality to it, because you can't quite place the language. Mm-hmm. They had liked the idea of shooting the movie in this way. And they also wanted to appeal at the time to an art house crowd, which, you know, they weren't a big budgeted film, so they were going to shoot for that. Now, art house films at the time in 1966, when this movie was set to be released, weren't that huge of a thing, but at least they existed, and they you could get sometimes, you know, your movie in there. It just had to be a certain type of movie, mm-hmm. or you were relegated to a drive-in sort of thing, a grindhouse, and then you'd have to get like recut with like nudity and things like that to really succeed. Right.
As an update.
So, yes.
On Archive of Our Own, which is the best fanfiction website, there are the following fics available in Esperanto. One for Sherlock, there's one for Power Rangers Time Force, for Teen Wolf, for Fire Emblem. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is.
What's the pairing for Fire Emblem?
For Fire Emblem, it is George / my unit.
I have no fucking clue.
And Chris.
Okay.
Interesting. Ooh, there's Starman TV, Supernatural, Devilman, Carmen Ryder, and that's about it.
All right.
So, fandom rich tapestry.
There's the Time Force though. Power Rangers one. That's pretty impressive.
I'm digging the Teen Wolf. Teen Wolf is. Oh wait, is this got to be the TV Teen Wolf then? Actually.
Yeah. Not the good one.
Oh. I was thinking good old fashioned Michael J. Fox, Teen Wolf in Esperanto. No. Fanfic.
Shit, that would be ridiculous, though.
Back to the movie.
Sorry.
Oh, back to the movie, yes. All right, so the movie was released in 1966, directed by Leslie Stevens, who is mostly known as a writer. He did a lot of writing for Outer Limits and had also done, later on, Buck Rogers. Now, the movie is about, or at least starts with, a pair of sisters that are succubus. They're succubi.
Awesome.
Right?
Sold on it already.
And I'm sure you guys... Right, exactly. Shot in black and white. So basically, their whole deal is that they lure bad men from the town that they're in out to the sea where they drown them.
Hey, and, this movie is great already.
Right? I see. There's also there's levels to this as to why I brought this. Totally felt it would be up your alley, guys. So look, the younger sister, though, begins to have bigger, loftier desires in maybe not seducing the evil men, because they're kind of easy game. She starts getting the idea that she wants to try to lure good men. So she sets out to do so, and she finds this virtuous, God-fearing man in William Shatner.
Of course. Who else? Who fucking else?
All right. I buried that on purpose because I knew you guys would dig that. William Shatner is our virtuous hero and completely sends...
Oh my God, said no one ever.
I know, right? I mean, just look at him for 5 seconds and you know he's got bad things on his brain. So she sets out to lure this man, only to fall in love with him instead.
Mistake number two after luring
right?
him.
This
exactly.
sounds like, what is that, the mermaid movie with the light cannibalism, Amanda?
Oh, The Lure?
Yes, that's
that
what
one.
It sounds
yes.
like.
Good one.
Yeah, no, I haven't actually watched that
Never
one
fall in love with the sea god is rule number one. Never fall in love with the Shatner is rule number two.
Shit.
Exactly. I would kind of think it was like a 1A and 1B, right?
Yes. Like it's the same rule just broken down.
Oh, James, yeah. you combined my two favorite things, which are rules and also hierarchy.
I'm here to help. So she falls in love with this guy, right? And her sister gets really upset by this, you know, because in some way he's you know, defiled her and you know, ruined her purpose. And also offends her by taking her into a church. Yeah, yes. No, he did a bad thing. So she runs away, and to get revenge on him, they both concoct this idea of summoning an incubus. I should have looked up what an incubus is. I know you guys probably already know, and I'm assuming it's the male version of the succubus.
Yeah, it's just a dude succubus.
Yep.
It's a dude succubus, right?
Yeah.
They, for some reason, didn't want to make the term dudejubus a thing, but
dudejubus.
Here we are. Here we are.
Exactly, dudejubus. That's a hard one to get your lips around, though. So, you know, it's all okay. They summon this guy, and they have they set him upon what intended to kill William Shatner's character, but instead he finds the Shatner's virginous younger sister, and as one does, he then proceeds to defile her and murder.
Doing good. Loving it so far.
It's got everything. All of the classic beats. And so from there is just like this big struggle that they go through that ultimately culminates in the younger sister deciding that she will go with this man that she has fallen in love with and that loves her, but not before she has to make the sign of the cross, turning the incubus into a black goat who then attacks her. But you know, it all works out in the end anyway, so. I know,
James,
right?
Jesus, Catholicism, and also goats. I love it.
I know. It's such a neat movie, and I haven't watched it in a really long time. And I remember, though, before getting into like the particulars of what makes this whole thing horrible, the guy who played the incubus was just really insanely captivating. Like, he was just really, there's something creepy and off about the dude, and there's a reason for that. A few things that happened post-production on the movie. The girl who played the virginal young sister to William Shatner's character, she committed suicide just after the filming wrapped, like, by a couple of weeks. Her name was Anne Atmar, and she had a somewhat mild career in girly magazines, apparently. Mm-hmm. But there's really not much known about as to the why or how she went about committing suicide. That was mentioned, and I figured that maybe there's, you know, with the stigma of that at the time, you know, that maybe that there was some element of that being the reason.
Yeah, blackmail, but, or like morality laws or something.
Yeah,
kind of, exactly.
Yeah, because I mean there was that pressure at the time, that there was that stigma about that. So, you know, if her film career wasn't going that great and she was having to rely on that, maybe that was the reason. But that's all speculation on my part. So there's also the older woman, the older succubus sister. Her daughter was, like, back in 1968, was kidnapped from their driveway outside their
Holy
home.
Holy shit. No! Yes.
Yeah. Just right outside their house, their 17-year-old daughter was kidnapped.
Fuck.
And her body was found in the Hollywood Hills, like, 2 weeks later. Never solved. Never
Oofa
solved.
Doofa. Wow. That's not good. The next movie that we're going to talk about was written and directed by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh. Ooh. The better half of
those two.
The original series, yeah.
So I should preface, I've never seen Three Men and a Baby before. It is not a movie that I've seen, but it has a spooky thing in it. So.
Is that not the subtitle of The Hangover?
Nope.
It's not.
But I think I find it, it's probably inspiration for it, I think is really it.
Probably.
All right, let's fucking gear up, y'all.
It's the story of three bachelors having to take care of a surprise infant together.
Are you sure it's not a non-traditional family of three poly gay dudes?
I am 100% sure.
I'm thinking that comes up, though, in the film.
I don't know. I've never seen it. It was actually the highest grossing film of 1987.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a dark year.
So despite the fact that it is a more lighthearted movie than most of the ones that we've covered so far, with the exception of Wizard of Oz, I guess,
mm-hmm.
it has a rumored scene that is the talk of many. Mm-hmm. The scene in question is a long take, no cuts, that features Celeste Holm, who plays one of the character's mothers, carrying the titular baby throughout the apartment in which all the men are staying in. So in the background, at first in the scene, you see what looks like a rifle.
Okay.
And then the grim visage of an angry boy hiding behind the curtains and peering out at them.
fucking Polonius behind the Aris style? Fuck
so,
you.
So the legend behind it is that the apartment the movie was filmed in was the scene of a grisly suicide by rifle, and that the boy who killed himself haunted the set and made an appearance.
No.
So interestingly, the story was stoked by the emergence of the VHS. You good?
Yeah.
It was stoked by the emergence of the VHS. For the first time, folks could like buy a VHS, go back, rewind, and pause in order to prove their point and obsess over details.
And therefore, the TV recap culture of the internet began.
Exactly.
Yes.
But much like The Wizard of Oz, this urban legend doesn't hold much water. The apartment that they shot the film in wasn't even an actual apartment. It was in a soundstage in Toronto.
Okay, that's like basic, y'all.
Yeah. But so what was the creepy silhouette that you can clearly see in the background?
I'm not going to answer because I know.
Was it like a producer's kid?
No. Obviously, it was a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson. Yep. So the character Ted Danson plays in the film is an actor, and originally there was going to be a scene featuring a cutout advertisement of him advertising dog food.
Oh my god.
But the scene was eventually cut out of the film, leaving the inexplicable cardboard cutout in the background.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah,
that is so much better than the myth.
It's so good.
That's so good.
It's just like Ted Danson in like a Top Hat and Tails. And it looks like an angry boy in the background because it's a VHS and it's blurry. Well,
it's out of focus. Yeah, it's out of focus. It's completely out of focus. You can't really see what it is. So even if you paused it, good luck. But imagine, I love the fact, the imagination on that.
Imagine like grainy 80s VHS films too. Like, of course it's going to look like a creepy boy. It's Ted Danson in a Top Hat and Tails.
Yeah. Also like the worst nightmare of like an assistant director or lighting designer on that set probably.
Yep, 100%.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
We're going to move on to one that isn't really film related, but it's still Hollywood related.
All right.
And that is the story of James Dean's cursed car.
All right, so James Dean flamed bright, died young, wore a leather jacket, is a lesbian fashion icon, and was in a very bad movie by young people.
Rebel Without a Cause.
That one. Yep.
Good that's job, Amanda.
That's all I got.
Good job. So, no, that was great.
Listen, he's a lesbian fashion icon. I know my lesbian fashion icons.
So as you mentioned, James Dean is
William Shatner, also a lesbian fashion icon.
Really?
Not Spock. No.
His original series outfits, pretty good.
All right. Yeah. So, as you mentioned, Amanda, James Dean is the epitome of dying too young when you think of classic Hollywood. He died in 1955 in the Porsche 55 Spyder that became infamous as the car that killed him. But the question is, was the car cursed?
I don't know. Was it?
We're going to find out.
Probably not.
So James Dean upgraded to the 55 Spyder while he was filming Rebel Without a Cause and had it customized with tartan seats, two red stripes over the rear wheels, and the plastered number 130 on the doors, hood, and engine cover. It was nicknamed Little Bastard by Dean's language coach. And it was a sweet fucking car, man. It looked real good. But apparently the sweet ride was absolutely sinister.
It's like when you look at pictures of your parents in the late 70s wearing extreme bell bottoms and you're like, no. Like, how did
that's
they...
That's a
no. No.
The 50s were a weird time.
Or you see that picture of them being cool, like in a way in which you've never seen.
I don't own any of those photos of my parents.
Julia?
Yeah.
Your dad has so many photos of him being cool in the 80s.
He has so many, like, mustaches, though.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Not it's cool. The best.
Nah. Arguably
I guess it
not.
Depends on perspective, really.
Yeah, you're right.
The best for comical purposes. I love you, Phil.
Okay. So James Dean once met the actor Alec Guinness. You know who Alec Guinness is, Amanda? Who?
Irish guy.
Okay.
You, that's no, all I got. You know.
What was his most popular role?
Don't know.
You might know him as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, that's...
Wait, was he Irish? Yeah, I guess, maybe. I don't know. He was like a prompt British man, I think, if I believe correctly, who basically, if you read his letters while he's writing Star Wars, he just hated every minute of it. It's just him complaining about the rest of the cast.
Very relatable.
It's just hardcore relatable.
Love it.
So James Dean met Alec Guinness outside of a restaurant, and James Dean was like, check out my cool car, Alec Guinness, which Alec Guinness was probably not super into. So Guinness takes one look at the spider and told James Dean that the car had a quote-unquote sinister appearance.
And by whose account was this story relayed?
Alec Guinness.
Oh, right. So he has the like, Yoda... you know, esque powers of foretelling in the story.
Well, no, he then goes, he says these words that would come to haunt the car. He goes, if you get in that car, you will be found dead in it by this time next week.
I super don't believe it because Alan Guinness is mythologizing himself.
Hey, man, guess what happened 7 days later?
But he died.
Dean was killed in Little Bastard in a tragic car accident. It is some straight up ring shit that Alec Guinness wished upon him.
But I bet that Alec Guinness was just like, I hate myself and my career, so let me just invent a mythology about foretelling James Dean's death.
I'm not going to say you're wrong.
He was always cranky, that guy.
He was always cranky.
He seems very cranky. In the movie, he's like, ugh. That's his role.
Yes, basically.
Exactly.
The Force. The Force.
You wouldn't understand the Force.
Clear your mind, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's like the third brother of Edward the whatever and George the whatever, the dad and uncle of Elizabeth. I've been watching The Crown a lot.
Oh.
And he's like the third brother who's like, ugh, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Yep.
So James Dean wasn't the only victim of Little Bastard, though.
No!
George Barris, who originally customized the car, like put those sweet tartan seats in there and shit like that. after the car was wrecked, he bought the wrecked carcass of Little Bastard.
Like, not even Minerva McGonagall would have tartan seats in her vehicle. Oh, she'd be like, no, I'm a classy broad. Goodbye.
She had a carpet bag in the books as her travel
bag. She'd have a tartan
bag.
Carpet bag stored discreetly in the back seat.
Okay, anyway. So while trying to repair it, the car actually slipped off its trailer and broke a mechanic's leg.
No!
Barris did the right thing. For him, at least, and sold the engine and drivetrain to two racers, Troy McHenry and William Eskrid. McHenry lost control of his car after the engine was installed and hit a tree, which killed him instantly. Eskrid was severely seriously injured when his car suddenly locked up and rolled while trying to go into a turn.
Fuck.
Barris sold the tires too.
No.
Which blew out simultaneously, causing the new owner's car to run off the road.
I figured the tires are the first thing you just burn.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Two thieves broke into Barris's garage to steal parts, and one of them tore his arms open trying to steal the steering wheel, while the other injured himself trying to remove the bloodstained tartan seats.
How does that even happen? eBay wasn't even invented.
Barris needed to get rid of the car, obviously. And managed to convince the California Highway Patrol that they should take it for a highway safety exhibit. The first exhibit failed because the garage holding the car caught fire and burned to the ground, though the car suffered virtually no damage.
Oh, what a little bastard.
The next exhibit was at a local high school, and it ended abruptly when the car fell from its display and broke a student's hip.
Julia, do you remember when there was like a high school, I don't know, spectacle where they had like a wreck of a car?
Yeah, it's don't drink and drive during prom.
Like, don't drink and drive during prom.
Yep.
Yeah, that was just such a... I mean, who does that every year? And she's like, fuck, it's late April. Don't drink and drive during prom.
You made us watch that video. We get it. Anyway, the California Highway Patrol gave up on the car after the truck transporting it lost control, which caused the driver to fall out of the truck and get crushed by the car after it fell off the back of the truck.
No!
Jesus.
Did he live?
No, he got crushed by a car.
Julia!
It's like Christine.
Why are you telling me this?
So they tried to return the car to Barris, but the car mysteriously disappeared and has not been seen since.
No.
Yep.
No. No, no, no,
no,
no.
It's out there
no.
haunting the streets of California somewhere.
No.
It went off on its own.
What if the like 400 constituent parts that make up that car are just spread out in like the most horrific accidents from the last four decades?
Apparently there's like one piece in a museum in Chicago, I think.
Don't want to go there. Not going to go in that museum. Okay. No. Cursed. Goodbye.
All right.
You sure you don't want to do like another podcast about it maybe and like a travel?
I don't believe
that could be our second spaghetti get in.
I don't want more spaghetti get in. I don't. No.
I don't believe you.
No.
No.
I don't believe in ghosts, but I also don't tempt fate, and I'm not going to go see it.
Fair enough.
That's it. Goodbye.
That's fair. I think it's fair.
So, we're going to end on one final story. Amanda, have you ever heard the name Peg Entwistle?
I sure haven't. And also, do you really need to tell me this story?
Yes.
Are you really sure?
Yes.
Can you reflect on our 21 years of friendship and just confirm in your body, mind, and soul that you need to tell me this story?
I really do.
Okay.
So I'm not surprised that you haven't heard of poor Peg, because she was an only moderate successful actress in life.
Okay.
But she did manage to gain a little bit more fame in death.
Okay.
Because also she goals. Is known as the ghost of the Hollywood sign.
Ooh.
On the night of September 18th, 1932, she leapt to her death from the 50-foot-high letter H.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll probably choose the letter O because it's symmetrical.
Fair enough.
Was she a silent film actress?
I believe so.
Yeah,
she didn't do a lot of stuff.
Well, because I think when everything went to talkies, a lot of silent film stars didn't make it over to talkies.
So Peg was actually the inspiration for Katharine Hepburn to get into acting.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so she like she had some like influence, but you know she's more famous now in death. So there's a couple of different stories about seeing Peg's ghost. Over the years, many park rangers have reported seeing a pretty blonde woman dressed in 1930s clothing wandering the park paths, looking sad and vanishing when approached. Which, like, yikes. Same.
I, too, disappear when looked at directly. Yeah,
true. One park ranger named John Abergast, which is a great name.
That is good.
Claims to have seen Peg's ghost on several occasions. He says that she tends to appear when conditions are foggy, and she is always accompanied by the strong scent of gardenias. Which wow. I feel is very Hollywood. I'm all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all I've got for Hollywood stories. I'm sure I forgot a lot of stuff that people would love to hear about, and you should send those to us via email so that maybe we can talk about them in a listener roundup episode.
SpearsPodcast@gmail.com. My takeaway is no one should make movies ever.
Okay. Interesting choice.
That seems like the safest choice.
All right. That's an interesting one for sure.
James, how do you feel?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a blast. I don't think you've missed any big ones. Not that I can think of, at least ones that are meaningful. I mean, maybe somebody's got some out there that are like, oh, I know this one thing with like, you know, from like the Justin Bieber movie that, you know,
that's our favorite kind. And,
yeah. So, you know. I think you got all the major ones, at least the ones that are meaningful.
I did forget to mention the fact that the movie The Exorcism features an actual serial killer
as an exorcist.
Exorcist, sorry.
The Exorcist.
Yes.
Ah.
Someone in that movie ended up being an actual serial killer.
Yes.
Right.
Whoa.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like an extra in when they're doing like a brain scan of the girl or something, or like a
scan. Like an X-ray or MRI technician.
Yeah,
yeah, and he was a serial killer.
Yeah, he was like called like the prep killer or something like that.
I wonder sometimes how many people in my life have like gotten sandwiches from, or like passed on the subway, or have driven like buses that I've been on.
How many accidental serial killers?
Yeah,
yeah, I got that. It's an interesting,
or even
thought.
Secret ones that haven't realized their, you know, their.
Ooh,
thing
unrealized
inside, you know?
potential serial killer.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
Please go to therapy, everybody.
Everybody,
exactly.
Please go to therapy.
Get it out.
Literally every person could use therapy.
No one can't use therapy.
Completely agree. Also, I'm gonna just remind our listeners that these stories have been super fun. We've had a lot of fun here today, kids. But
thanks, Mom.
Listen, if you feel bad, you don't need to. And if you want some help to talk about it, you can call 800-273-8255. That's a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And if you feel like you are in a bind and you need some help and you want to understand your resources for surviving assault, for living with an abuser, for doing whatever you have to do, and you just need someone to talk to or some stuff to Google, you can go to rainn.org. rainn.org. They are a super, super great organization and they can help you out.
Thank you, Amanda.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
In between screaming about James Dean's car and the kid in The Omen, I have some stuff to say.
I'm glad. That's what you're here for.
Well, listen, James, thank you for joining us for this
thank you.
Journey.
Yes, it was excellent, and I was so glad to have a tag team partner when it came to research.
That was a fun scenario. Yeah.
James, do you want to plug your stuff?
Yeah.
Plug your stuff, my dude.
Absolutely, absolutely. The show that I've written and created and work on with Alex, Alexander Danner from Greater Boston. Our show is What's the Frequency? It's a psychedelic noir audio drama.
It sounded like you were actually asking a question, which I super love. You're like, my show is
What's the Frequency?
What's the Frequency?
What's the Frequency?
Julia's
yeah,
in it.
So it's yeah, Julia's in it. Actually, she's amazing. She's actually one of our main characters. So we're gonna actually I don't know if she's told you this, but we're gonna make Paul F. Tompkins is in every podcast apparently.
Yeah.
Julia and I are gonna make it so they always call like what is it PFT? Oh, PFT, PFT, yep. PFT. So we're gonna make our own thing with the audio dramas. It's gonna be JJ OS.
Yep.
Nice.
So it's gonna be JJ OS all the way.
I also want spirits to exist in every single audio drama fictional universe.
I need it to happen.
We have, what, like three?
Oh,
we're
sure.
in three
so
now.
Far?
I think we're in three.
Oh. I'm going to need everybody else to just acknowledge our existence.
Yep.
I can canon-wise confirm that you are.
Thank you.
You do exist in our universe. So.
All right, good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's a wild show. I mean, the show is very sort of a bit avant-garde, a bit forward-thinking with the audio aspects. We just really try to do as much as we can with telling our story through audio, considering that this is the format that we're choosing to tell the story in. So we rely heavily on that. So
yeah, like the Wizard of Oz.
It's a lot of just exactly. We're the Wizard of Oz of audio dramas. So we just turn the Technicolor on right at the beginning. Actually,
first episode.
Little black and white Technicolor right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you listened
you
to
can
it?
Quote
Have
me.
You listened to it at all yet?
I just started the first episode, actually. I know. I didn't listen to it for a while because I was, like, nervous for Julia. And I was like, I hope it's good. But it's actually good. And so I listened to the first episode very recently.
Good.
Yeah.
I was worried that it might be, like, a little heavy or something like that. Like, you might be like, oh, it's a little...
Nah.
You know. Okay, good.
No, she hasn't gotten to the good murder parts yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
But I would recommend it to any of our listeners. It is the definition of creepy and cool.
Yes.
James is creating something really bizarre and really wonderful, and it is definitely something you should get on board with immediately.
Word.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm in it, because it's genuinely a show that I listen to and I'm excited for episodes to come out for.
I'm super stoked that I get to have you in it. And if I had thought of it sooner, I would have probably tried to corral Amanda into it and put
I'm
her
available.
In somewhere.
But... she can do some mini eps.
Oh no, believe me, I've already thought about where to put her in, and I have something coming up soon for a mini ep that she might get
don't you
a request to. Do some recording.
You got me.
I'm twirling my mustache right now. I don't have one, but it's just, yeah.
Well, thank you again for joining us. Truly, it has been a horrifying emotional roller coaster of an episode, which is the best kind.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Great. And remember, everyone, to stay creepy.
And if you buy a car belonging to James Dean, make sure you check the oil and the engine coolant frequently, because that car is fucking cursed as fuck. So stay cool.
Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram at Spirits Podcast. We also have all our episodes, collaborations, and guest appearances, plus merch, on our website, spiritspodcast.com.
Come on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Throw us as little as $1 and get access to audio extras, recipe cards, director's commentaries, and patron-only live streams.
And hey, if you like the show, please share us with your friends. That is the best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.